Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Cindy.
Yes.
You
are a cold, Tony.
Modest spending woman, are you not?
I know seriously how to cook some inexpensive food, so all.
Okay, well, that's what I want to talk about.
Kidding aside.
Is
I said, let's do a show called Cheap Eats and Cheap Drinks.
Sounds like you have a particular mission in mind.
I'm excited. I like the idea of, I mean, there are just so many different things you can do. First of all, I have to make employee meal every day. So I do make inexpensive food every day because I have to feed up to 35 people every day. And I mean, obviously the business can only bear so much cost for that each day.
What is your all-time favorite employee meal?
Oh, I can tell you.
As far as response from the crowd.
I can tell you right now what mine is. Forget the crowd, which actually everybody else agrees with me. So it
spoken
is
like
both.
The baby of the family.
Right. Well, because I told Everardo the other day, I'm like, oh my God, you have to make this on my birthday, which is a pork butt that he cooks. It's pork shoulder. It's called pork butt as well, but it comes from the shoulder of the animal. And it's a big boneless piece of pork, which is actually one of the things on my list of things to talk about. So the pork shoulder is a great piece of meat because it's inexpensive. You can feed a lot of people with a pork shoulder. And it has a nice amount of fat in it. So it's going to be very flavorful. And you obviously have to braise it because it's inexpensive because it's an off cut, which means it's got some you know, sinew or whatever in it. It's going to be a little bit tough. So you just have to braise it. And one of the traditional Mexican dishes is, you know, obviously tacos and using tortillas with a little bit of fresh lime, cilantro, red onion, and then just having this wonderful pulled tender piece of meat. And, you know, honestly, I know that part of the way he seasons it is, you know, good salt, pepper. It's very simple. He puts onions in there with it, but he puts a lot of cilantro, a few jalapeno peppers, and that's really it. It's super simple. Or he cooks it in milk, which, oh my gosh, that I love as well. So, but yeah, nice tender piece of pork like that. And
you cook it till it falls. Cook
people.
It till it's falling apart and you can just pull it.
Yeah, and it's just a couple of hours, you know. I mean, it's not that hard to do. You just cut it into relatively big pieces, you know, like maybe the size of half of the center of your hand, you know, like a square piece. I don't know. I don't know inches. I can't say, oh, do 4x4. I've just never done that before. I can't tell you that, but just nice big pieces of pork, and you don't remove anything from it. Nothing's wasted. I mean, we literally eat it all, so it's really good.
All right, so that's on your list.
Yeah, that was on my list of one of the things that I wanted to talk about because
okay.
What I like about it is it feeds so many people inexpensively.
So let's just jump right into your list.
Okay.
These are, what's the title on your list?
Well, Cheap Eats and Drinks. That was my philosophy for this radio show. And I picked up, the first book I picked up, the first section was, it's an older French lady chef who actually was Paul Bocuse's mentor when he first started cooking. And she has a restaurant in Lyon, had a restaurant in Lyon. It's still open. And the first chapter of her book was a bunch of egg dishes. And I know we've talked about egg dishes plenty of times on the radio, but I mean, that is the best way. That is going to be one of the least expensive, best ways to feed a whole bunch of people is
well,
eggs.
Well, and eggs have incredible
thousands.
Nutritional value.
Yeah, they're good for you. They have protein. And there are just so many different things you can do with eggs. It's amazing. So a couple of things we had Easter recently. And on that holiday, I knew I wasn't feeding a lot of people, but I knew I had to work a lot, you know, up until that point in time, I wouldn't have a lot of time to do prep. So I kind of just went through the kitchen mise en place, which mise en place means everything in its place. So it's all the ingredients that it takes to make all the dishes on the menu. So I went through our mise en place and started pulling things like we had cocoa beans, we had some saffron basmati rice, I had some lentils from our magret dish. And I just started putting it in a big to-go bag, like a plastic baggie, a big baggie. And
the mise en place thief.
It was awesome. I had snail butter and then I grabbed a little bit of reduced chicken stock that was cold from the walk-in so I could heat up my rice and my beans. And I went a little bit expensive. I grabbed some lobster since it was a holiday. But so aside from that, forget the lobster, but everything else, you know, just grabbed all this great mise en place. And so I thought the good way to start off would be to do friseo lardon, because I have never made that at home, which is funny, and it's because we serve it at one of our restaurants.
So
and
frise lardon, the classic bistro dish where you take frise, which is a little bit bitter, you know, curly endive, basically, mm-hmm. and you get that in a pan with fat and...
bacon fat.
Usually bacon fat and onion and wilted a little bit.
Right, right. So right. what? So I did it a so little
a warm
bit.
Warm salad.
You know, it's funny because I really do appreciate the struggles that people have in their home kitchens because I try to stock my home kitchen like the restaurant, and there's always going to be something that I don't have that I wish I had from the restaurant. I can't get every single thing in my home kitchen that I need.
What did you need to make
a frise lardon? I didn't have a bowl big enough to toss the greens. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. So I did the salad a little differently in that I made a hot dressing and poured it over the greens because I really didn't want them to wilt that much. So I had actually, they're fish tubs. They're plastic, big rectangular containers that we had. I happened to have one at the house that our fish comes in from one of our purveyors. And that was the vessel that I had to use to toss my salad. And I'm like, oh, I need to get a big bowl for the house.
So note to self, give Cindy a salad bowl for her birthday.
Golly, right? Thanks, Tony. And so
size of a coffee table.
So what I did was I cooked off the bacon before the guests came. And it's called lardon, which means it's square pieces. So you're using what's called slab bacon. And you can probably get it from a butcher in a good store or ask them to order it for you. And that way you can cut squares of bacon out of that and you can make them however big you want. I didn't have access to that, and I had all of about 30 minutes to run down to the grocery, so I just bought regular old sliced bacon. So I chopped it up, kept all the fat, reserved the fat, and just left it in the pan on the stove because I was, you know, maybe 30 minutes from my guests arriving. And I washed my lettuce, which was the frise as you talked about, and I actually served it also with arugula, so rocket. So it's small pieces of arugula, and it was super fresh, and it was one of the reasons why I grabbed it. I'm like, oh my God, this arugula is so, so good. And I like arugula because it's a little spicy, and the two together are fantastic. So, and a friend of mine who has a farm across the street from me had given me some fresh eggs from her farm, from her chicken. So that was another reason why I'm like, oh my God, I've got these eggs. I absolutely am going to do frise au lardon. So I pre-tossed my arugula and my frise in this, well, we'll call it a bowl, I actually added a little bit of extra virgin olive oil, salt, and pepper, just so it was like lightly dressed, this is not the traditional way to do it. I'm going to tell you the right way to do it after this. This is going to take an hour.
This is a long time commitment for a salad. It better be a good
salad.
I'll
make it fast. So when we were ready for our first course, I did that. I just tossed the lettuce, seasoned it with salt and pepper, and I had a really great blue cheese that I crumbled and had ready to go. And I had my water in my pot on with vinegar in it and a little bit of salt, and my eggs were out. So I put them each egg in a little ramekin, which helps you to pour them properly into the simmering water to poach them. You don't want to overdo the vinegar because it flavors the egg. You don't want the egg to taste like vinegar, but you need the vinegar to coagulate the egg to make it become its mess. And so I popped the, turned on the pot really fast, had that come up to a boil quickly. I heated up the dressing, and I actually just poured the dressing over the greens, and it wilted perfectly. It was awesome. And then I crumbled in the blue, and then I plated it in really nice. It was a big salad, so I plated it in big bowls, and then I spooned out my poached egg and on top, and I put a little bit of extra virgin olive oil and salt and pepper on top of the egg, and done. So, and literally, it takes like 3 minutes to make the salad.
I mean, once you have stuff together. Yeah,
the mise en place is quick, and if you're set up.
It takes a big pan.
Well, that's the other thing. I didn't have a pan big enough to do salad for four people at once. I
have that giant copper pan in my house.
I now need a giant copper pan. So the true way to do it is it would be the bacon fat, the bacon or the lardon in the pan, make it hot. You would probably have a little corn oil in there. I also put shallots in that pan. So you're getting your bacon fat hot, a little corn oil, little shallot, work it, and then you toss in the greens, and it would only be, it's traditionally only frise, and you would put your egg and put it on top and your blue cheese on top and season the egg, and there you go. That's a traditional way of making it.
And the salad greens need salt.
Yeah, and you just want to make sure you don't, literally the greens are in the pan for like 20 seconds. I mean, you just toss them around in there and get them the heck out.
They shouldn't wilt too much.
Right, right.
But, you know, you want them to keep some crunch.
Yeah, definitely.
You also don't want them to be cold. And
right.
Cool thing about that salad is the fact that when you break that egg, the yolk runs out, and you just kind of retoss it.
Yeah, that's the best part.
You retoss it with the vinaigrette, so the pork fat, the crunchy bacon, the salt, mm-hmm. the little bit of sweated onion, all of that all tosses in with it. And that and it kind of coats the greens that are not really that wilted. And
you want to tell your guests that. That's a great thing. Because I did tell my guests that because they had never had the salad before. I'm like, oh, yeah, you break the yolk and toss everything together. So go ahead and tell your guests that's what they should do so they get the full advantage of the egg. Another sort of heartier egg dish that I love is eggs murette. And why don't you talk about it because you can describe it
beautifully. That's also not the hardest thing.
It's not.
The biggest trick there is what are you going to actually poach the eggs in? Do you have stock reduction?
I usually just use red wine and a little bit of chicken stock.
Wine. Yeah,
I use almost all red wine. It really, the eggs aren't in there long enough to make it be like overwhelming. So truly you could just use red wine if you wanted to.
Well, if you poach them just in red wine, it is nice to get them on the plate. Take some of that red wine and reduce it with a little bit of reduced stock.
Whether
it's veal stock or chicken stock.
Well, need a sauce, right?
But yeah, you need the sauce anyway. I mean, the whole point is to have the eggs look mysterious, you know, because they're colored by the red wine on the outside. And so when you crack open, again, when you crack it open to get a soft, you know, the soft runny
yolk.
Egg.
Yeah.
It's that dark purple exterior and that bright golden sun from the interior.
Yeah, it's very pretty.
It's pretty cool. And the garnishes are important. This is another dish. It doesn't take very long.
No, it's easy.
You have to get everything together.
Mm-hmm.
Garnishes, I mean, traditional garnishes are pearl onions that you have had peeled and roasted off a little bit. And although some people boil them, I don't like that.
No, roast them.
Roast them.
Yeah, roast them in their jackets. Honestly, it's the easiest way to peel them then.
People also often put lardon.
Yes.
For that. I've had versions where it was just all vegetables, where it was...
I've only seen it with button mushrooms.
Yeah, mushrooms, carrot, potato, cauliflower.
Ooh, caper. I don't want all that on there.
Yeah, capers.
No, that's not traditional. It would be fun to do.
I've seen a very, very well-executed version. I've had a very well-executed version like that.
Okay.
That made it a vegetarian dish.
Oh, no bacon? Okay,
yeah.
All right. Well, that's fun. Well, I didn't think about it that way, but but the traditional way
the mushrooms are that base of flavor.
Pearl onions, mushrooms, and the lardon, and then the reduction sauce, which would be like chicken reduction with a little red wine in it, and then brioche, toast.
My all-time favorite version I've had of this has been with asparagus and morels.
Oh, gosh. That would be so good.
So, the trick is you take the chicken stock you're going to use, you reduce it with stems and the morels.
Oh, yeah.
So you get some of that mushroom flavor in there.
That would be amazing.
And then you add some of the cooking red wine to that reduced chicken stock with the morels. So you get the acid in the sauce.
Mm-hmm.
You need the acid in the sauce for when you break that yolk and the yolk runs out. You get the balance in the dish.
Definitely.
But that you desperately need toast.
Oh, yeah.
You need exactly the right...
There's so much good stuff on the plate.
You need exactly the right toast, whether it's grilled or whether it's something that you toast in a toaster. Or I will admit, I like to be about toast. I like to be the French guy about toast. Taking a nice slice of baguette and buttering it and frying it in a very heavy pan,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
in butter, both sides. Drain it. And then tear that up and get that egg and all the sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Or go ahead and plate the murettes on that toast.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I brioche is just easy to eat. How would you do that inexpensively? Because morels can be very costly. So.
Well, May is probably the one time to do it. I mean, you're coming into asparagus season.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get very good local asparagus, and it's not a big piece
so
of money
good.
At all. And it doesn't require a lot.
Right.
So that's the thing, is that the dish is... I mean, it's eggs poached in red wine. It doesn't have to be fancy wine. It can be wine that's left. It's like you had 3/4 of a bottle of red wine
that's
with dinner last
idea,
night.
Sort of the idea, frankly.
And you use the leftover. You get a boiling. You slip the eggs in there.
Yeah.
You know, that. So that, and the morel is like the one treat. You could use a variety of other mushrooms. It's really fun to have that flavor, that texture, that appearance.
But you could use button mushrooms as well, which
absolutely.
Are very inexpensive. So.
Or cremini's, which have a little bit more of a base note.
Okay.
But you don't need a million. And morels, if you get one or two decent size, they don't weigh much.
Well, especially if you're eating two poached eggs. And you're under a dollar for two poached eggs.
I mean, it gives you a couple of little rings that when you cut the morels to lay as a garnish on it. And it looks beautiful with little slivers of asparagus that you have. But you're eating eggs on toast, it's not going to cost you that much.
Right.
It's just kind of sexy eggs on toast. So any other egg dishes you want to throw in there?
I was going to talk about quickly just cheese souffle and quenelle de brochette, but I think the cheese souffle is the one that, I mean, that literally costs you almost nothing to make.
That's also like
a great lunch dish.
Any 5-year-old is going to be pretty happy about the cheese souffle through.
For sure.
85-year-old, so.
Yeah.
I'm guessing your cheese souffle is a little involved, so we should probably get onto that when we come back.
Okay.
We're talking about today on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, cheap eats. We've knocked out a couple of egg dishes. We're going to go into a slightly fancier egg dish, a cheese souffle, or more involved, I should say, because it doesn't have to cost a fortune. We might be able to slip in a couple of inexpensive wines. And then, of course, our last segment, there'll be a chef's challenge with a budgetary constraint. All of that and more on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
Chef Cindy Wolf.
And so we're talking about budgetary constraints. We're talking about cheap eats.
Cheap eats, cheap wine, which we haven't gotten to the wine part yet, but we will.
Cheap wine, that hurts my feelings to say cheap wine.
Well,
value wine, inexpensive wine.
Inexpensive, yeah.
My marketing soul doesn't allow me to say cheap wine.
What wine would you drink with those two dishes?
Egg dishes?
Quickly.
Beaujolais.
All right.
In a heartbeat.
Cool. Perfect.
And it doesn't even have to be one of the fancy villages like Morgon or Moulin-en-Vent or something.
Mm-hmm.
It could just be, I mean, you're in good vintages. 2015 is still around. Pretty much any good house is going to have worthwhile just Beaujolais Village. And you're talking about something that's retail, $10 to $15 tops.
Okay.
And serve it a little cool, like cellar temp, and it'll be
good.
Great with those dishes.
So, quick cheese souffle recipe, 4 tablespoons of butter, 1/2 cup of flour, 1 cup of milk, salt, pepper, nutmeg, 1 1/4 cups grated Gruyere, 4 eggs, and you separate them. And making souffle, the more you make it, the more confidence you'll have, the better you are at it, the more success you'll have. 350-degree oven. If you have a convected oven, turn it off. You don't want convection going. You want a still oven. It's going to take about 30 minutes, depending on the size of your dish. And all you have to do is melt the butter in a heavy bottom pan. You whisk in the flour, the milk, which should actually be hot when you go into the pan with it. And you just bring it up to a boil, and you only cook it for like a minute. You just want it to thicken. Once you see that flour mixture, flour, butter, milk mixture get super thick, then you're done. You've done your job. Add salt, pepper, and just a tiny bit of nutmeg. I mean, literally like a pinch. And take the pan off the heat, add what I love the chef in this recipe said, a nut of butter. So just like the size of a walnut of butter, and just whisk it in. And then they add the egg yolks one at a time. You're off the heat doing this. You're no longer on the heat. You're never going to be back on the stove. So you're just working on wherever you can work in your kitchen. I have stainless steel tables, so I can go onto one of those tables and work. Then you add the Gruyere and whisk it in, and then you whip your whites to a stiff peak and you fold those in gently. So you should go into a bowl at this point with your mixture, use a spatula, fold in those whites, and then you want to butter your dishes, your souffle dishes, and I would put them on a sheet pan or a cookie sheet, something to just keep the bottom of the dishes from getting too hot, and sprinkle a little bit of Gruyere on top. And my suggestion would be that you use a microplane, which does a super fine grate. That way it doesn't add heaviness to the top of the souffle. It'll rise better than sort of a heavy grate. And that's it. But, you know, that's souffle. And with a cheese souffle, I mean, that's literally very, very, you're talking about a couple of dollars to make something like that. And for a few people, and you can serve a nice green salad on the side, or you could just have it as one of the courses. And, you know, after that, you have the braised pork dish or you know, great piece of grilled chicken or whatever. But souffle is fun to make, and it's an experience to make. And I think it's an achievement to get to make one that's savory.
Now, what do you do if it doesn't rise?
you don't do anything. You don't eat it. It's nothing.
It just becomes a cheese casserole.
You've ruined it. Try again or do it another time or have a backup.
So why would it not rise?
You're basically making a bechamel in the pan. If you didn't thicken that enough, you know, you need that to be thick. If your egg whites were, you whisked them in the mixer or by hand so far that they turned watery, you've whisked them too much. Or if you under-whisked them where they were just like loosey-goosey and running all over the place, then the souffle won't rise properly. So I strongly suggest you practice a dish before you serve it to somebody.
I have seen someone do souffles and fold too stridently.
Okay, well, folding is a delicate process. Yeah. So you fold in through the middle.
That doesn't mean you like violently mix something together.
No, you need to very gently.
It's a square motion.
Yeah, you very gently fold in the whites into the product. Yeah, it's fun to make. Just practice before. You know, I think another great direction to go is chicken. There's just so many different chicken dishes. And we live in a chicken-eating world. When my mother used to come and visit me, I would make, she always was surprised how quickly I could put dinner together. And I never thought about it. And I'm like, well, I am a chef.
You're a chef with an attention span problem.
Yeah, well, I do not. But anyway, so sautéing chicken can be, you know, it probably depends on how big the chicken breasts are, but you're probably talking 7 to 8 to 9 minutes, you know, from start to finish. And if you have all your mise en place ready to go prior to that, you can make this dish and, you know, you can have dinner ready in 15 minutes, basically. One of my favorites, I used to make this when my father would come to visit, my mom and dad would come to visit, was cavatappi with a mushroom cream sauce. And I would just saute sliced button mushrooms and butter until they were caramelized with a little bit of salt and pepper. I'd add a little bit of chicken stock to the pan to just get everything off the bottom of it. And then finish with a little bit of heavy cream and let that sauce work while I'm cooking my pasta, which I would have already had my pot on with water and salt, and my water would have already been boiling, and I would have dropped my pasta down. And cavatappi is a nice one, or rigatoni. Those sorts of big pastas with holes and crevices are great for sauces like this. I like how the sauce clings to the pasta, and it's just, I love cavatappi anyway, but it's fun to eat that shape of pasta. And then you have this seared chicken breast that's by this point already in the oven. You've seared it in corn oil with a little salt and pepper. You could always do other things to it, but frankly, you don't have to. And then, you know, just slice out the, once it comes out, you can either serve them whole or you can slice them out and have this bowl of pasta with the mushroom cream sauce. You could always, and we're talking inexpensively now, and it wouldn't cost that much money, but you could add a little bit of wine to that cream sauce with the mushrooms. You could add Madeira, you could add cognac, you could add, you know, a little red wine, white wine, but I like a little bit of cognac in my cream sauce. And I mean, it's only a couple tablespoons, so it's not, you know, but if you don't want that in there, you don't want that cost, then just don't add it. Just make sure it's seasoned well. But, you know, that's a heavy, rich dish that's going to go a long way, that's going to make people feel really, you know, nice and full. Maybe a lighter chicken prep with something with haricot vert, niçoise olives, basil, roasted tomatoes, extra virgin olive oil. I mean, that's light. It's all great vegetables. It's healthy. You know, your whole base of the dish is olive oil with salt and pepper and a little bit of fresh herbs. And, you know, you make this great piece of chicken, you season it nicely, and you just serve it with all these great fresh vegetables.
On a budget, I always think of beans.
Mm-hmm.
You have any favorite beans?
I have lots of favorite beans. I love lentils. I love cocoa beans, which are a little white French bean.
French beans are more expensive.
I love petite rouge peas, which are a pea that are being grown by Ensign's Mill in Charleston. I love Crowder peas. I love black-eyed peas, which are probably one of the least expensive beans you can buy. Black beans, I mean, I'll just keep going. I like beans a lot.
Once upon a time, you had bean cakes on a menu.
Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah, they were black
really
bean
good.
Cakes.
And if it's a vegetarian dinner in our house, a lot of times it's some version of something like falafel with chickpeas, or recent discovery is zoolafel, which is, well, you can make zucchini cakes, and they're quite good.
Uh-huh.
And you can make falafel, which are the chickpea cakes, right?
Yeah.
Well, what if you put zucchini in your chickpea cakes?
Zoolafel.
Yeah.
I like that. That's fun.
Want something popular for your four-year-old?
That's cute.
Make something that starts with the word zoo.
Right.
And that can be an easy centerpiece. If you get it nice and crispy, it's a little breadcrumb, you throw an egg in there, season it nicely. You know, everything's been good. Not the zucchini. The zucchini will just cook and steam while it's in there, and you just have that grated, and you just fry the cakes in the pan. Very easy. Keep them warm in the oven. And in the meantime, you can make, if you have like whole Greek yogurt, very easy to make a version of tzatziki or or labneh.
Yum.
So that's just a little bit of cucumber and a little tiny bit of shallot or onion, and if you want herbs,
sure.
You know
those are good the next day too.
They're very good the next day.
So that's
day.
The thing I like but about you, a lot of those cakes is that they're good cold, you know?
They're very good with a poached egg on it,
Gosh. Yeah, I mean, you can, and they may even taste better the next day. So that's a real time saver, and, you know, you're even more cost effective because you're utilizing the dish more than once.
You know, when you make pickles at home, like pickled peppers, if you want to make them a tiny bit spicy, you'll put one Calabrian chili in there. And then you just kind of keep feeding the pickle jar. You take some out, but then every time you trim pickles, you throw some more in there,
that's
right?
That's fun.
So then you have those pickled peppers that are a tiny bit spicy to go with the yogurt business, to go with the zoolafel, right? Just getting to make you laugh. You make a little zucchini salad very easily, or a carrot salad with lots of dill. But there's any number of things you can sort of toss on there.
Sure. Yeah, that's good. That's a good medium for other things. I think one of the other things that's so inexpensive that is, I mean, we use it all the time to feed ourselves for employee meal is ground meat. And so I'm either buying ground pork, ground lamb, and quite frankly, this may not be the least expensive, but I will ask my meat purveyor to grind a leg of lamb for me. And that's really, really good. And but you obviously...
Any ground lamb is super tasty.
Oh my gosh, I love ground lamb.
Lamb burgers are great.
Oh, one of my favorite things ever is having... So what I do with that is for 1 pound of meat, you do one whole egg and about a quarter of a cup of panko. So a little breadcrumb, a little egg is what's going to really give you great texture in that, you know, whatever you want to call it, kebab or...
But I know you can't say burger, but some people would call it a burger.
Oh, well, okay. So, and then
just
also
like you
sometimes
can't say sandwich.
I will put yogurt in there. Speaking of yogurt, I will also add yogurt, which is obviously this is very Persian, but I sometimes add chili powder, cayenne pepper, Tabasco, not inexpensive saffron, but, you know, so I'm just throwing that in there, but don't do it if you're on a budget. And, salt and pepper, and I do like a little Tabasco and cayenne in because it just makes it more interesting. But chili powder is, gosh, one of the greatest spice mixtures for ground meat, and just really work the mixture. You know, you can. I often just make mine on a cutting board, so I use the heel of my hand and just keep working it and molt and mashing it together. I've watched my brother-in-law make kebab many times, and I think that sort of process of actually really working the mixture is extremely important to get the texture that you need to really make that like all come together and be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is ground meat. It's delicious.
I wish listeners could see
Masood doing this.
No, your elaborate hand
motions right now
when you talk about working all this ground meat.
Yeah, well, you know. And you could do ground pork, and do you use your favorite spices? Often when I do pork, I do curry, but you could do the exact same spice mixture I just used for ground pork. Veal is very delicate. I don't even know if you can get ground veal at the grocery. But that's not that expensive.
But what about meatballs?
Or we make meatballs. I mean, now, oftentimes I actually didn't say what the shape was. So I roll it out into a log. And it's like, I don't know, how big is that, Tony? I mean, I don't know. I make like a nice,
it's
the size of a
giant
a log
lamb ballpark wiener.
So I roll those out, lay them on a sheet pan with parchment paper underneath, and then we roast them in the oven at about 390 degrees. And it usually takes, I mean, obviously it depends on how thick it is, about 20 to 25 minutes. But I mean, that's out of sight, out of mind. I mean, at that point, especially if it's something like lamb where honestly, if it's a little medium or medium well, it's okay. Well done. If you want it to be that way, it's going to be a little drier. But certainly you can cook it all the way through. Just try to cook it gently, like just up to the point of it being cooked all the way through. But with ground meat, it's got to be that day. Don't buy ground meat and make it tomorrow. Please listen to that. I don't want to suggest something to you that is not going to be healthy. So, you know, if you're you want to know how old the meat is that it's ground, it's best if you can get the butcher to grind it for you right there, right then. That's what I do when I go to the grocery and I make something like this. And then I go home and I make it. Don't leave that in the refrigerator for tomorrow or the next day. That's not okay with ground meat. I love meatballs.
One healthy option that I'll advise you to make slightly less healthy is ground turkey. Ground turkey makes really flavorful
turkey.
Meatballs.
Oh, totally. Absolutely.
But,
yummy.
But you have to cheat.
Oh, how so?
It has no fat.
Yeah.
It has no fat. So if you actually want them to like to sear and to be juicy, and you can add all kinds of whatever to the inside of the meatball into your mixture with an egg. You can add.
And I forgot to say onion.
Sweated shallots and garlic.
Yeah. I forgot to say onion. I always add finely chopped raw onion to my.
If you are having an extravagant meal, save that duck fat. You know, save that pork fat. If you have roasted chicken and you have chicken fat, schmaltz, save it. Add that to your
ground turkey. Yeah.
And make that part of the mixture. When you're roasting that in the oven or if you're frying those guys in a pan,
okay,
the fat melts out, and as they roll around in the pan, they're basted in the fat and makes a giant difference in how they caramelize and the overall flavor. And honestly, just that their ability to not be dry.
Okay.
Nobody wants a dry meatball.
No. Okay, Tony, so that's a bunch of ideas. What about wine for value wine?
Oh, my gosh. Let's just start with meatball wine since we're on meatballs.
Yes.
So if you're making something like you're talking about, the lamb kebab, Rhone Valley, really good place to go. Grenache-based wines, really good idea. Red Zinfandel, also really good idea. Mm-hmm. You notice I'm not probably going to tell you about drink Cabernet Sauvignon or Bordeaux or any of the things that you think of.
Right.
As like, oh, that's my favorite. Well, the favorite that you don't know is probably going to be the value wine, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's you look for those things in good vintages. You're looking for little Cesenese from Lazio around Rome.
Okay.
Those can be delicious, medium weight, you know, sort of Pinot weight with attitude towards the acid required for Italian cooking. So like the turkey meatballs I was talking about.
What about something Argentine?
Argentine like Bonarda, Argentine like Cabernet Franc, or Argentine like Malbec?
Malbec, yeah.
You can definitely find inexpensive Malbec that's
okay.
Really, really good. Most of South America, if you taste really broadly, like we have, you'll find things at every price point that are really worthwhile.
That's great.
That's the one place you can find Cabernet Sauvignon that... You know, just like straight out of tank, but still really good texture and flavor. And yeah, there's a producer, Trapiche. Those guys in Argentina make very good entry-level Cabernet Sauvignon. All right, now I'm getting thirsty, so we're going to have to take a break. When we come back on Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine, it'll be more cheap eats, more value wines, a little thing we like to call the Chef Challenge. All of that and more on Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're talking about working with a budget, trying to make excellent cooking, do it quickly, but definitely cheap eats, using your phrase. You have a few minutes yet to acquit yourself.
What do you mean?
As someone that can make inexpensive food.
Well, gumbo is, being someone that loves Southern food and I've done a little bit of research on it, I love gumbo and it's a great vehicle, again, to prepare. You know, you can make a lot of it. It's great the next day or maybe even the next day, just not a week later.
If you're a bachelor, you can.
You may not, as our producer, keep your gumbo for a week.
So,
but, you know, the cool thing about gumbo is it can be made with crawfish or shrimp or chicken or pork product or whatever. You know, gumbo is a dish that's all about okra and rice and some sort of, you know, probably a stock and lots of vegetables, typically onion, celery. It could have carrots in it, but rarely does.
The only time that you can probably inexpensively buy okra is going to be in midsummer. Going to farmers
markets.
Well,
that's when it's its best. I mean, if I was going to use okra, I would definitely buy it when it's coming out fresh because
it's also cheap.
Golly, it's just so good. It's so good. And okra acts as a thickening agent for the gumbo. Now, it also depends on what kind of gumbo you're making. You can also add another thickening agent in the form of roux, which is butter and flour in equal parts, gently melted and whisked together over low heat. And it depends on what you're making. Again, say you're making duck gumbo. Duck legs aren't as inexpensive as they used to be. They used to be very affordable, and unfortunately, well, I guess fortunately or unfortunately, a lot of chefs in our country, you know, probably over the last 15 years or so have really started to use duck legs. So when there's demand, the price goes up, but it's still less expensive than some other cuts of meat. And you can go pretty far with some duck legs. And if you make gumbo from duck legs, then you've also got bone and fat, and you're going to make have great flavor, but you need a dark roux for that. And a dark roux takes 30, 40 minutes on very low heat in an oven. I mean, you literally want it to be a mahogany color coming out. That's a time commitment. But
tricky to do it and not
it is tricky.
Burn it,
a
too.
Dark,
so.
Yeah, you have to be super careful. But even if you went to just sort of a light brown stage with the roux, you can use that. But the traditional way would be to use a dark roux because it tastes like, you know, chestnuts and walnuts and richness and sort of caramelly. I mean, it's an incredible flavor to add to your gumbo. But so, you know, if you're slicing the okra on a bias, you're washing it well, slicing it on a bias, you're adding onion, shallots, maybe a little garlic, a little celery to the pan, working all of that. Maybe you have a little duck fat hanging around. You're working it in the duck fat. Then you're searing the duck legs in the pan, getting good color, adding hopefully duck stock if you have it, if not chicken stock. If you have it, either one, and adding spices, and often in the case of gumbo, you would use filet powder. It depends on what region of the South you're from. Filet powder is sassafras root, and that's traditional to New Orleans. In Charleston, which is where I'm much more familiar with the cooking, it would probably only have a little bit of cayenne pepper or some sort of hot sauce. You know, I have often made my own hot sauce with vinegar and hot peppers in the summertime and pickled them or just boiled and bottled it. And so that would be more traditional in Charleston. But whatever you like, that's what it all comes down to in the end. But you could also, as I said, you can make chicken gumbo, which you could use, you know, just, again, the light vegetables. And
I'm surprised you went gumbo instead of pirlo.
Well, let's finish up the gumbo preparation. You would add the roux at the end. I mean, once all the ingredients are in the pot and the stock is in the pot, you add the roux to thicken, keeping in mind that your okra is also going to help thicken. So you don't have to add that much roux to the pot, and you're going to cook it a long time. It's probably going to be on the stove for a couple of hours, which means your stock or your liquid will begin to reduce. And then just check it for seasoning. And you'll probably add a tiny bit of salt at the end. Maybe check it for a little bit more hot spice. I definitely like Tabasco in mine. So, and then you're serving it with rice. That's the traditional, you know, and your rice, because your gumbo may be super complicated. Let's say you made just very quickly shrimp and tomato gumbo. Your rice needs to be neutral. I mean, honestly, you can just saute onions and a little bit of butter, add the rice, add a little chicken stock, salt and pepper, and have a very simple rice, long grain rice, to go with your gumbo, because it's just a foil for the gumbo itself. But Pirlo is fun because it is another one pot dish.
Pirlo, there's a bunch of spellings though, but I think the
well, that's because the dish is so old.
If you want to look it up, it's P-E-R-L-A-U.
And it's considered the state dish of South Carolina. And it really comes from the word pilaf. But, I mean, you know, when you're talking about cooking that was 250 years old, you know, you're talking about recipes that weren't written down. They were passed by word of mouth. And so spellings were always very, very different from recipe to recipe and person to person. But pirlo is the main idea. The idea is it's a one-pot dish. Hop and John is the most basic of all the pirlos. So you would cook your black-eyed peas in, you know, with bacon and onion or fatback and onion and some sort of, again, I would put Tabasco in or hot sauce and chicken stock. In the back in the day, they would have just probably used water and make your black-eyed peas. And then at the end of the cooking, you add the rice to the pot. Rice absorbs all that great flavor from the black-eyed peas, and that's a one-pot dish. That's what a pirlo is. When we opened, when I first started doing low-country cooking here, I was doing a pirlo that had mussels, clams, pieces of fish like rockfish, particularly now that I was working here in this region and realized how important rockfish was to the cooking here, and shrimp. And I was using head-on shrimp. And we used to have a steamer in the kitchen, and I would actually put all that shellfish, except for the shrimp, in the steamer, steam it open, catch the juice, saute the shrimp, put the juice in the pan or the liquid from the shellfish being opened, and then add the rice to the pot. And now I always made red rice for that one. So Charleston red rice is made with onions and shallots sauteed in butter. Again, you're adding chicken stock, but you're adding tomato paste. Again, a hot sauce like Tabasco, salt and pepper. And that's that tomato product in the rice, really, and a little bit of butter, quite frankly, really makes for a great accompaniment to the seafood. But then the rice would, again, absorb all the liquid from the pan. And especially when you're working with mussels and clams, you get all this great liquor from those pieces of shellfish. I love making Perlo. Really walking down through history when you make a dish like that.
Well, I'm pretty uniquely American history.
Right.
And for something else unique, I have your chef's challenge.
All right.
And I want to make sure that you know that I just have random, like, you got home.
Fun. Okay.
Well, you got home, you're hungry, and the neighbors say, our fridge is out and it's spoiled.
And they're coming over.
And they're coming over.
All right, cool.
So that's what you got.
Okay. Bananas? Really, Tony? Cilantro?
That's what you
I would
got.
Never have bananas at my house. The only
Why
way
not?
I'd have bananas at my house is if my mom was coming over. Cilantro, dried basil.
Maybe your mom was just there and didn't eat all
it
the
says,
bananas.
It says a carrot. That's hilarious. Two pieces of bacon?
Like I said.
That's fun. I like it.
Yeah, carrots for one.
Day-old bread, rice, Uncle Ben's, spinach, cheddar cheese, sour cream, celery, chicken legs. You can go potatoes, eggs. Is it some kind of pepper?
Pickled peppers.
Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't have those in my fridge either. All right.
No,
so,
you might have gotten them as like a weird part of a Christmas basket or something.
Oh, boy. This is a challenge. So the chicken legs.
Yeah, you bought them to make tacos tomorrow with them.
Chicken legs. Going to brown those off in the pan. And I'm going to dice the onions and the pickled peppers and the celery and work that with the chicken legs. I'm going to braise it. I'm going to dice the Yukon Gold potatoes. I'm going to hold those on the side until near the end of the cooking process. I'm going to chiffonade the spinach and hold that on the side until the end of the cooking process. I'm going to brown off those two amazing pieces of bacon in a separate pan.
Amazing bacon.
And that carrot. Actually, the carrot's going to go in with that all that chicken business. And then the bacon, I'll dice it once it comes out of the pan, add the fat to the fat and the bacon to the chicken while it cooks. And you gave me, cilantro. All right, so at the end, I'll add the potatoes. So they're going to be a small dice, so it won't take but 4 or 5 minutes for those potatoes to cook in that amazing, you know, liquid. And then I'll add I'll roughly chop the cilantro right before I'm about to serve the chicken dish and just throw it in with the broth. That'll be good. And then, So I'll guess I'll make eggs. A little quick appetizer. That's weird. And they probably won't come back to my house of scrambled eggs. They'll probably go somewhere else when their refrigerator breaks. A little bit of cheddar cheese in with the eggs as I saute them, and I'll put just a little teaspoon of sour cream on top, which is basically the same thing as creme fraiche, and actually a little bit of the chopped pickled peppers might be fun on there too. That would probably be pretty good. And then the day-old bread, I'll make toast points out of it, and I'll put that on the side of the plate with it. And I don't know what I'm doing with that banana. I think that's like banana and capers.
I don't know what you're doing with that banana?
I guess we're just going to make a dessert with the banana. So I'm going to reserve some of the sour cream. I'm going to hope that even though it's not on here, I have some brown sugar in my pantry. Do I?
No.
I'm going to remember that, Tony Foreman. All right, so the sour cream and the banana are going to become
dessert. You do have Nilla wafers, though.
No, I don't. All right, so the banana and sour cream mixed together in the blender, makes a little smoothie, and they're going to have that when they come in, and I'm going to give that to them to drink when they walk in the door. Here, something healthy.
I hope you put a bunch of rum in it.
Okay, your turn.
All right.
All right, so your condition is a lot easier than mine, which is that you have to make two courses out of that food. One course is for white wine and one course is for red wine, that you tell us what it is that's an inexpensive, good value wine.
Okay. 21-30 count shrimp, onion, shallot,
which are inexpensive.
Herb, spice, shrimp stock, rice, poblanos, celery, carrots, mussels, butter, olive oil, rice. I guess I want to do a thing with the mussels and the poblano. Do I have breadcrumb? No. I'm asking you, do I have breadcrumb?
No. Are you kidding?
Okay.
You have nothing but what's on the page.
Nothing what's on the page. All right. What I'd like to do with the mussels, I want to steam those guys open. Yeah, I guess I'm going to have to use the shrimp stock because I'm not going to ask you for anything else. I know I'm not going to get
right.
it.
That's right. That's right.
I'm going to steam. So the shrimp stock, I'm going to give it plenty of celery and onion and garlic. And a small amount of that, I'm going to steam open those mussels and save that juice and those mussels. The shrimp I'm going to steam open also. I'm going to slice those guys thin. I'm going to make a little quick vinaigrette. It says herbs, spices. I'm going to make a vinaigrette with dill. And if I can you know, perhaps steal a lemon from somewhere.
No.
I would make it.
No.
No?
No.
What if I have one in my
you
car?
You can't have anything that's not on the list. You already laid down the gauntlet. Yeah, that's right.
I denied you one thing and I gave you something
yield.
Else.
All right.
I have white wine. So I'll make a vinaigrette with shallot, white wine, a little bit of garlic, a lot of dill.
I already gave you all the spices and all the herbs in the world.
I understand.
See, that was open-minded.
But you didn't give me any vinegar or any citrus.
You just got to work with it, man.
I'm going to serve that sort of thin slice laid out almost like you would lay out sushi shrimp with that vinaigrette. The rice I'm going to cook with poblanos, carrots, tomato puree, and the mussels. And their juice.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
And the mussels and their juice.
Okay.
I'm going to finish that with butter. What kind of rice is it?
Uncle Ben's. Sammy okay. gave me.
Oh, you can see like risotto running across my face. Yeah, nope, can't do that. All right, yeah, I'm slightly dithered by your ingredients and your strictness. That rice dish with the mussels and the shrimp stock and the tomato puree and the poblanos. The poblanos, I probably want to roast on the range for a second beforehand so I can peel them and seed them and fine dice them. They'll add good flavor with the mussels for sure. Just trying to picture the dishes. Like, oh my God.
The wines.
The problem with your list of ingredients and your requirement is that they don't connect.
You gave me this crazy list of things that don't remotely go together. But
I didn't tell you to match them with the wine.
Well,
you know?
All right, you're going to have to figure it out.
I can't figure. The only red, I mean, good Lord. I mean, you could have a red, a really, really, really light garnacha from Spain, maybe. And that's a good value, too. That's for sure. Gotcha. Not Monastrell garnacha. Mm-hmm. For there are a bunch of different ones from Spain. Make sure the alcohol is not too crazy high, because they can be.
Okay.
I would have that with the mussel and rice dish or the poblanos. I think that would work.
I knew you'd figure it out.
I like wine. The shrimp, that not really a crudo, but being served as a cold shrimp salad, basically, with lemon and dill. White there could be an albariño from Spain, and there's some relatively inexpensive albariños. Might be really, really nice with a simple Pinot Blanc from Alsace. So those are the first things that jumped my mind. There are some Greek whites, too. And
ooh, that's exciting.
That might be...
I don't think I've ever had Greek white.
That might be fun. Yeah. So,
okay. Awesome.
Yeah, you got me.
All right. I like it.
You got me.
Right on.
All right. Well, I think that's probably all we have time for. I'm exhausted.
I think that's enough.
If you want to listen to this program or any other podcast of Formidable Wolf on Food and Wine, please go to the WIPR site. So that's WIPR.org. Look up the Formidable Wolf page, and you can find all the episodes there. If you want to email us with all of the things I missed in doing these last recipes, please do so. It's formanwolf@wipr.org, or any other questions or suggestions that you have. You can follow us on social media.
You can follow me on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf and on Instagram as Chef Wolf.
And I am The Real Tony Forman on Instagram.
Right.
And that's all we have time for, so thanks for listening.
Happy Sunday.